Okay, let's unpack this. Today, we are diving deep into something, well, frankly, a bit terrifying. It's this convergence of high-level cybercrime and just everyday digital behavior. Our mission here is to really dissect this sophisticated malvertising campaign. It's being run by the Resida Ransomware Collective, and they're using this initial access tool called Oyster Loader.
Yeah, and what we're really looking at is a campaign that fundamentally exploits trust. These threat actors, they found a way to weaponize the very thing we rely on for finding information online, search engine advertising platforms. They're using them to distribute malware. It's an attack that kicks off not with like a phishing email or some vulnerability deep in your network, but just a simple search for legitimate software.
Right. And for you, the listener, the relevance is, well, it's immediate. This isn't some abstract risk. It's about understanding how security can be compromised right at that first step, the moment you think you're downloading software. Resida, they popped up in 2023, apparently a rebrand of the Vice Society Group. They're a major player now. And what we're seeing is this huge scaling effort just aimed at getting that initial access widely.
They've pretty much turned Bing effectively into a highly effective paid-for malware distribution channel.
Wow. Okay, that brings us to the trap itself then. Section one, how does this malvertising actually work? How does it fool people searching for common programs?
It's remarkably simple in concept, but just ruthless in how well it works. So, an unsuspecting user, maybe someone needing secure remote access software or joining a meeting, they search for popular tools like PuttyY, maybe Microsoft Teams or Zoom, and the cybercriminals, they just buy the premium ad slots for those search terms.
Meaning they pay Bing or whoever to show up above the actual genuine source. They're literally outbidding the real developers.
Exactly. They are. They pay to occupy that prime real estate right at the top of the search results page. And they leverage that psychological thing, the assumption that the very top result is the most relevant, the official one. Research shows a huge chunk of users click those first few links without even really registering the little ad label.
And here's something our sources flag that's particularly jarring. How this integrates with Windows 11. These malicious ads aren't just in the browser.
Correct. Yeah, for anyone on Windows 11, these compromised ads can pop up directly within the OS's own start menu search. Think about that for a second. You're not even in a web browser. You're using what feels like an internal OS feature, and bam, you get served a malicious ad disguised as a legit app suggestion. It creates this incredibly powerful illusion of safety, makes the compromise feel almost, well, unavoidable if you click it.
That makes the whole deception incredibly effective. So if I
Okay.
click that link, I'm not landing on some obviously dodgy page. The sources say these landing pages are really well done.
Oh, absolutely professional grade. They mimic the real software sites almost perfectly. We're talking meticulous design, really convincing URLs, maybe, a tiny misspelling or an added dash, that kind of type of squatting. And crucially, they display valid SSL certificates.
Ah, the padlock icon. The very thing we've all been trained for years means this site is safe, this is trustworthy.
And that's the really clever, insidious part of the deception. The SSL certificate, it only validates that the connection to the server is secure, encrypted. It says nothing about whether the entity running that website is legitimate or trustworthy. Attackers can easily get a valid certificate for their malicious domain. It fools automated checks, sure, but more importantly, it fools the user's eye. It gives that little bit of reassurance right before they click the download button, which of course delivers malware.
Okay, if the trap is that slick, what's waiting on the other side? Let's move to section two and talk about Oyster Loader. Here's where it gets really interesting. You said this isn't the ransomware itself, it's like the opening act. What exactly is Oyster Loader?
That's a good way to put it. Oyster Loader is classified as an initial access tool, or sometimes just a loader. Its whole design philosophy is stealth and patience. Long-term residency, not making a lot of noise right away. Think of it like the attacker leaving a hidden key under the mat rather than smashing the window and grabbing everything immediately.
So it's the scout laying low.
Yeah.
Why this two-phase approach? Using a loader first and maybe ransomware later, why is that more effective for a big operation like Resida?
Well, it boils down to minimizing their risk and maximizing the potential value of the compromise. That initial infection through malvertising, it's high volume, right? And inherently kind of noisy from their perspective. They're throwing out thousands of these ads, hoping people click. If they dropped actual ransomware immediately, antivirus would likely flag it much faster, security teams would react, and their expensive ad campaigns would get shut down quicker.
They'd burn their access method almost instantly.
Exactly. But by using Oyster Loader, which is built to be heavily obfuscated and really quiet, they separate that initial, relatively low-value, high-risk infiltration from the later, potentially high-value, targeted exploitation phase.
That sounds like, well, disturbingly good resource management for a criminal group. Okay, so once Oyster Loader is in, once it has that foothold, what's it designed to do? What are its primary functions?
Its goals are entirely strategic at this point. First, establish persistent backdoor access. That means they can get back in whenever they want. Second, and this is crucial, reconnaissance. It allows the attackers to map the network, understand the infrastructure, figure out what data is valuable, identify critical systems, basically determine if they've landed somewhere worthwhile. Only after they know they've hit a potentially high-value target do they use Oyster Loader for its final purpose, facilitating the deployment of other payloads. That could be the Resito ransomware itself for encryption and extortion, or maybe tools for large-scale data theft.
So it lets them turn a sort of generalized spray-and-pray compromise via the ads into a much more focused, customized attack later on.
Precisely. Infiltrate quietly, study the environment, then launch the calculated high-impact attack.
The sheer scale of this operation, it really points to a serious level of financial backing and operational planning. Let's get into Section 3. The scale and sophistication of how they evade detection. We're seeing a huge jump in the resources they're throwing at this, aren't we?
Yes, absolutely staggering. Our sources highlight a big difference between, say, their 2024 campaign, which ran about 5 months, used maybe 7 code signing certificates compared to the current one. This latest campaign, active since June, has already deployed over 40 certificates. That's like a six-fold increase, more than that even. It signals a really substantial ongoing financial investment just in their evasion tactics. They clearly see this as sustainable.
And they need that investment because of how they hide. The first technique you mentioned is advanced packing. Can you break that down a bit? What is packing, and why does making the malware file different, maybe smaller, help it sneak past defenses?
Sure. Think of advanced packing like putting the real malware inside a complex digital nesting doll, or maybe camouflaging it. The actual malicious code, the dangerous part, gets compressed, encrypted, and sort of hidden within multiple layers of seemingly benign code. Now, traditional antivirus, the basic stuff, relies heavily on looking for known signatures, specific patterns of bad code within the file it can see. When that file is heavily packed and encrypted, the AV scanner often can't see the actual weapon inside. It just sees the encrypted outer shell, which might look harmless.
So it looks okay to the automated security check.
Yeah, exactly. And the result, which is pretty shocking, is this critically low initial detection rate. When these newly packed malware samples first hit the streets, research confirms they often trigger alerts from fewer than 5, sometimes even fewer, out of dozens of major antivirus engines. This creates a dangerous window of vulnerability, maybe lasting several days, where Oyster Loaders can slip onto networks undetected before the security community eventually catches up, analyzes it, and pushes out new detection signatures.
Okay, that's one layer. But the second evasion technique seems just as powerful, relying on trust. Certificate abuse. Why does having a code signing certificate give malware such an aura of trustworthiness?
Well, operating systems like Windows are fundamentally designed to trust files that have been cryptographically signed by a developer. This signing process is supposed to verify the identity of who created the software. So, when a piece of software, even if it's malware, has a valid digital signature, the OS often grants it elevated trust. It might run without those scary security warnings or with fewer prompts because the system assumes, okay, this has been vouched for. Resita basically turns this entire security mechanism on its head and uses it against us.
So where are they getting all these certificates? You mentioned over 40 recently. Are they just buying stolen ones on the dark web?
That's definitely one route, yes. Buying stolen certificates or ones obtained fraudulently using fake company identities. But they also actively steal them from organizations they compromise. If they break into a software company, grabbing their signing keys is a top priority. And perhaps most concerningly, they've been caught exploiting systems specifically set up to enhance security, particularly Microsoft's Trusted Signing Service.
Wait, they're abusing a Microsoft service designed for trusted signing. How does that even work? That sounds like a major breakdown.
It does. The Microsoft Trusted Signing Service, as I understand it, is partly designed to issue temporary, like 72-hour certificates. The legitimate use case might be for developers testing builds or needing short-term signing for specific distribution needs. Reseda apparently figured out how to automate and abuse this process, essentially weaponizing it to sign their malicious files at what analysts are calling an industrial scale.
Mm-hmm.
They managed to get an authorized, albeit temporary, Microsoft-linked signature onto massive batches of their Oyster Loader malware.
Microsoft must have reacted quickly once they found out. They revoked the certificates, right?
Yeah.
But what happened then?
They did react. Microsoft has revoked, I think the number is over 200 certificates tied to these actors. That's a significant response. However, and this is the key part, our sources confirm that the group's overall operations continue pretty much uninterrupted. This implies they have multiple, resilient, and probably rapidly changing methods for constantly getting new signing capabilities, whether that's through finding new ways to commit fraud, discovering new exploits, or simply buying more stolen ones. They aren't being stopped by the revocations alone.
That really highlights the challenge, doesn't it? Even the biggest tech giants are in this constant cat and mouse game with these incredibly resourceful and well-funded cybercrime groups.
It definitely raises some deep questions about the security of the whole digital supply chain and, you know, the fundamental trustworthiness of digital identities online.
Okay, this all sounds pretty grim. But as defenders, we need to focus on what we can do. What are the defensive opportunities here? What does this teach us?
Yeah, it raises that critical question. What tangible steps can organizations and even individual users actually take? Interestingly, a slight advantage, maybe a silver lining, comes from their reliance on those certificates. It creates a tracking opportunity. When certificate authorities revoke a batch of compromised certificates used by Reseda, defenders know the group will need new ones. So the appearance of new, valid certificates being used to sign suspicious files can act as an early warning signal of renewed activity. You can monitor for that.
Okay, so that's for the defenders tracking the group. But let's give our listeners a clear, actionable checklist. What are the immediate defenses against this kind of malvertising threat?
All right, first and absolutely most critical, user behavior needs to change immediately. You must educate yourself, your family, your employees about the danger of clicking any sponsored search result, even if it looks perfectly official. Practice scrolling past those top ad results down to the organic, the unsponsored links. That's step one. Second, enforce strict source verification for software downloads. Only get software from official, known good sources. That means the developer's actual website, triple check the URL, or reputable places like the Microsoft Store, or maybe your company's own approved software portal.
So practical habits, like typing the URL directly if you know it, really scrutinizing the web address for those tiny misspellings, and maybe paying attention if your OS asks you to verify a developer signature. That padlock icon just isn't enough anymore.
Absolutely not. The padlock is like the bare minimum table stakes now. It guarantees very little about legitimacy. Now, shifting to the technical side for organizations, because that initial antivirus detection rate is so low due to the packing, you really need more robust endpoint solutions. We need tools that look at behavior, not just static file signatures.
You mentioned endpoint detection and response, EDR. Why is EDR better equipped to handle these packed files where traditional AV might fail?
Okay, so traditional AV is mostly static, right? It scans a file and asks, does this match any known bad patterns? EDR is dynamic. It watches what processes are actually doing on the endpoint after they start running. So even if that heavily packed Oyster Loader file initially slips past the AV scan because it looks harmless, the moment it unpacks itself in memory and starts performing suspicious actions like trying to create a backdoor, messing with system settings, contacting known command and control servers, trying to move across the network, the EDR solution sees that behavior and can shut it down.
Ah, I see. It catches the malware when it actually takes its coat off and starts doing bad things, not just when it's standing at the door.
Mm-hmm.
What about defending against the certificate abuse itself?
Yeah, organizations need to be proactive there too. Actively monitor certificate revocation lists, CRLs. These are published lists of certificates that are known to be compromised or invalid, and enforce OCSP checks. OCSP is the Online Certificate Status Protocol. It's a more real-time way for your system to ask, hey, is this certificate still valid right now? By enforcing these checks rigorously, you ensure that even if an attacker tries to use a certificate that was revoked just hours ago, your systems might block it immediately, preventing the malware from even executing. And of course, deploying good network-level ad blocking and web filtering can help cut off that initial infection vector right at the source, stop the malicious ad from even reaching the user.
So what does this all mean? When we step back and look at the big picture, this campaign, it really underscores a massive systemic vulnerability in, well, in digital trust itself. legitimate search engines, the ad platforms that fund them, even the trusted code signing mechanisms we rely on, the very foundations of online safety, are now prime attack vectors. Mm-hmm. They're being successfully exploited by a major, well-resourced ransomware group.
It really is a profound shift in the threat landscape, I think. The level of resource dedication from this Reseda group is, frankly, astounding. Think about it. Maintaining full operational tempo despite Microsoft yanking over 200 other certificates and continuing to invest what must be significant money just to weaponize the start menu search bar. So the provocative thought I'd leave you, the listener, with is this. If attackers are willing to pour this much money and effort into compromising the absolute first step of getting software, how fundamentally must we rethink our own definition of what constitutes a safe source online? We really need to move away from a default assumption of trust towards a posture of, let's call it, healthy, pervasive skepticism for pretty much any download that doesn't come through absolutely rigorously vetted and controlled channels. Mm.